Welcome back, Cinema Vino.
Hey, hey.
It's good to have you all here. Y'all are beautiful.
Oh, most of you.
Most of you are pretty attractive.
There's a couple uggos.
I'll let you sort out who's who.
It's not you, listener. You're not the one I'm talking about.
No. You specifically are beautiful.
Yep.
We're going to continue our Oscar snubs series. This is part 304. To qualify, it has to be a really good movie that was nominated for zero Academy Awards. Nothing.
What qualifies something as a really good movie?
That is subjective.
Eyeball test?
It's kind of like being an uggo. You know, you have to know it. You know, it's like what you're saying about a five-star movie. It's like, I can't quite pin it down, but I know it when I see it.
Yeah.
So it's like, you just kind of have that feeling when a movie is going to be like a great movie or a classic, or, you know, it's like kind of like Rounders. You know, it's such a, it tells a poker story so well, and it's so distinct in that sense. You know, it's going to stick around, especially when Texas Hold'em catches on, becomes like a national, you know, sport.
Yeah, I mean, it became really big off of Rounders.
Yeah, and so with Zodiac, I feel like true crime has really caught on the last 15 years or so.
It had a resurgence. I mean, true crime, I think with the advent of podcasts, I think true crime has really resurged. But it's been around forever. If you think about true crime going back to the days of, you know, the 1920s with like, you know, heists with like, you know, the celebrities that were around with you know, everything going on back then with gangsters.
Yeah.
I mean, people have had true crime obsessions forever.
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 Yeah.
We know about Jack the Ripper because people were obsessed with true crime in, you know, that part of time in London.
Exactly. I mean, it's like my wife and I toured, we did a Jack the Ripper tour in London to the, like, all the spots that, you know, that he went, and all some of his kills, like we went to a bar that he went to.
Or her kills.
Or her, yeah. Could be anybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the Zodiac case. This is definitely still, you know, a mystery.
It's not. It's Ted Cruz. I'm pretty sure that was settled. Mm-hmm. Settled law. Yeah.
Yeah. Stocky Widow's Peak. I could see it.
Mm-hmm. Looks like that shitty Wolverine. Just flaccid dicks come out of his knuckles.
That's an image I can't unsee.
Yeah, I'm Wolverine, man.
Yeah, don't give him Cialis, whatever you do.
Talk about cracking your knuckles.
Oh, so, yeah, touring, doing the Jack the Ripper tour, it felt like the first, like, true crime tour ever. Like, touring London, it was like, this is, like, the first, like, true crime, like, craze, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it felt a little bit like this, where it's like the guys roaming around, people are like gripped with fear, especially in this whole part of London. You know, it was like everybody was afraid to go out. And it seemed like the few people that did venture down alone got killed.
Yeah. And the 60s and 70s were kind of the golden age of serial killers, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of that perfect blend of when people were aware enough of serial killers, but they did not have the infrastructure to catch serial killers and put things together in a way that would actually, you know, catch them. So it was kind of that perfect blend of awareness and mm-hmm. not yet crime prevention.
Yeah.
So I think this was the era where serial killers really shined. I mean, Son of Sam mm-hmm. was a big one.
Ted Bundy
was huge. Son of Sam was one where people were also very afraid of going out. People were cutting their hair, dyeing it, mm-hmm. you know, to avoid the archetype that he was killing.
Yeah. Was it the Golden State Killer? And that was another mm-hmm. one. That's
GSK.
Which who they have caught, like you say, like the...
In the last 5 years, yeah.
Technology's caught up and they've been able to catch him. So, and we'll talk about that a little bit later with Zodiac. It's like, it's amazing that this is like probably the most famous unsolved murder case
yeah.
in American history.
Yeah.
So, we'll talk a little bit about Zodiac. First, we'll talk about the wine we're drinking. We're doing wines that have not gotten, like, they get a bad rap sometimes. So we start off with the first week with Merlot and then Chardonnay, both yeah. of which make sense if you drink wine. You probably heard bad things about both of those. We're doing Riesling this week. We're drinking the Ravines dry Riesling from New York, upstate New York.
What do people say about Rieslings?
Well, I mean, just working in the store, trying to sell people on Riesling, you often hear people like, I don't like sweet wines. I don't want to drink sweet wines. You know, it's too sugary. It's too much. And not all Rieslings are sweet by nature. Some of them are, for mm-hmm. sure. You'll get some sweeter Rieslings, but there's a lot of Rieslings that can be semi-dry or dry. I mean, if you go for like an Alsatian Riesling and from France, like the Alsatian Riesling, it's dry. Their whites are very dry.
Yeah.
So there are drier, or if you do like a cabinet.
You don't want wet white.
Yeah, exactly. if you do a cabinet style Riesling from Germany, they're going to be on the drier side.
Yeah, like a Cabernet Blanc.
Yeah. And this is
that's a little wine joke for you.
Hey-o.
Cabernet Sauvignon.
Mm-hmm. So this is a dry Riesling from upstate New York. And if you listen carefully, you can hear Jack. He doesn't like it when the microphones are on. He's not invited. So he sometimes will cry in the background gently.
I do the same thing.
That was Jack in D minor, in case you're wondering. But yeah, this is a dry Riesling, probably about $18, $18 to $20, not terribly expensive. If you're looking for an actually very food friendly Riesling, this is a very good, like light meat, you know, holiday type meal.
This go well with like a salad with like a nice vinaigrette.
Yeah. I mean, I think it'd be
a little bit acidic to play off of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very easy drinking, very food friendly wine, lower in alcohol, 12.5.
Yeah.
It doesn't beat your head. It's not a big over the top flavor. But it has a nice kind of a melon flavor to it. It has fruit, but it's not sweet. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Kind of like a bitter pear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bitter, but tart.
Yeah.
Definitely tart.
And it's just something that people, I think, bypass in the wine store. They think that these are just all sweet wines. But
I generally overlook Rieslings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they're not all sweet. So you just kind of have to either know what you're looking for, or hopefully at wherever you shop for wines, like there's a guy or a girl or whoever can steer you in the right direction and get you a good wine.
A wine person.
Yes. A good
non-binary wine person.
A sales associate can find you like a nice dry Riesling. If you like, there are also very sweet ones. I mean, that's a great thing about white wines. Red wines, you tend to be either mostly on the drier side. There are a few sweeter red wines, a few, not many. But with white wine, you can go up and down the scale. There's something, you know.
Rule of thumb, if you're in a wine store and you see somebody with a monocle, is it safe to ask them for their opinion?
Yes.
Okay.
And also to ask if they have any peanuts.
Very thin mustache. What's the rule on that?
I think thin mustache is Monopoly. No mustache is Mr. Peanut.
I thought Mr. Monopoly has a big bushy mustache.
Does he?
Kind of like a Mr. Pringles mustache.
We're going to have to do some research on this because I think of him as having a very thin handlebar mustache.
We
need to look into this
for very posterity's quickly. Sake, yeah.
While he does that, I'm going to fill you in a little bit more on the plot. So Zodiac came out 2007, directed by David Fincher, who directed Seven, Fight Club, Social Network, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. He does big, have a bushy mustache. You are correct.
Thank you. I was really concerned. I was actually in a Monopoly club in high school that I founded, called Economics Club.
Interesting.
So I felt pretty victimized if I didn't know that he had a big bush mustache.
Were you big in the B&O Railroad?
You know, I wasn't big on the railroads.
Okay.
Yeah. Or the utilities.
Yeah. And that's a whole separate podcast is Monopoly.
Yeah.
We could do 100 episodes on
it. Sure could.
Yeah.
It's all about the green spaces.
So the Zodiac, this definitely falls into the, for David Fincher, like Seven and Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, some of his darker thrillers.
And Mindhunter.
And Mindhunter, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so this is not the only serial killer content that he's done. This Seven.
Yeah. Excellent Netflix series.
Yeah, very good.
If you have not seen that. But yeah, and that kind of falls in the same time period. At least some of it does.
Later 70s, yeah.
Yeah. So late 60s through the 70s, Zodiac was a killer in the Northern California region. Kind of the Bay Area.
Good wine region.
Yeah, Napa.
Yeah.
Very hoity-toity.
Vallejo?
Yeah.
Which I feel like should be pronounced Vallejo?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird that they don't pronounce it with the Spanish.
Californians.
Spanish word, but not pronounce with the Spanish-like inflection. So Zodiac was a serial killer who, like, taunted the cops with, I mean, cryptograms? What would you call those? Like
ciphers.
Ciphers, yes.
Yeah, he sent little puzzles, basically, to be solved.
Coded messages, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I got a real strong, like, the new movie, The Batman, like, The Riddler. Like, it seems like they based him on Zodiac.
It very much felt like there was a little bit of Zodiac in his character.
Yeah.
Yeah. But The Riddler himself as a character is kind of along those same lines.
Yeah. Same deal, like Lex to kind of play games.
Yeah.
Make a game out of killing people and
makes you work for it.
Yeah.
He'll tell you what's happening if you can just solve his puzzles.
Mm-hmm. People compared the Batman to Seven a lot, but yeah, it also feels a lot like Zodiac and very dark.
David Fincher.
Yeah. And so the film, it also was supposedly based, David Fincher said, on All the President's Men, which is a mid-70s investigative movie. Carl Bernstein. Bob Woodward, they cracked the Watergate case. Kind of feels like that vibe. This shows it from both the cops and the reporter perspective.
Yeah, and All the President's Men kind of follows both the journalists and the investigators, right? Yeah.
Well, it's strictly on the two reporters, but it shows, like, it's very similar how it shows them. I mean, like, the almost, like, boring, like, poring over documents, like, running down leads. And All the President's Men,
the dirty work, yeah.
You see them, like, I mean, they're literally going over library cards in the Library of Congress to figure out, like, this, like, who checked out a book. And so they get, like, thousands of lines. And so it's, like, there's a very iconic shot in that movie where they pan up in the actual Library of Congress, and they show the two actors, and then, like, there's stacks and stacks of stuff that they're going through for, like, hours and days. And it's, like, them running down, like, fake leads or false whatever, like, you know, witnesses slamming doors in their face over and over and over, and eventually they get a break in that movie. But it's, like, showing that arduous,
hard-hitting, like, journalism.
Like, the crazy amount of work that went into them cracking that case.
Yeah.
And you get that vibe here where it's, like, there's so much work is going in. I mean, you see, like, the rooms full of files and stuff. I mean, the amount of work that from multiple agencies that went into this is crazy.
Yeah.
And so it just shows you that kind of behind-the-scenes grunt work that these detectives and reporters did to try and catch this guy. And for an assortment of reasons, couldn't quite pull it together.
So Mysterio and Iron Man are journalists.
Uh-huh.
One is a cartoonist, one is the crime beat reporter.
Mm-hmm. And
then the Hulk is the chief investigator.
Yeah.
He's the detective on the case.
Mm-hmm. Working with Goose from Top Gun.
Yep. Without the mustache.
Yeah, exactly. So, this is a pop culture haven.
All over the place.
Mm-hmm. And the guy that Jake Gyllenhaal, which I looked it up, dear listeners beforehand, I've always been saying Gyllenhaal, and I'm sure a lot of you have too. I've even heard Gyllenhaal.
I'm going to be honest. I'm going to continue to say Gyllenhaal.
But then we saw an interview he did with Conan where Conan says it correctly.
Confirms it's Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal. He is Swedish.
But not Jake Gyllenhaal.
It's not Jake, although I might say Jake just because it's fun to say Jake Gyllenhaal.
Please do.
So when he is in the basement with the guy who's suspected serial killer, that is the voice of Roger Rabbit in the movie.
Oh.
So there you go.
Oh.
Robert Fleischer is his name. Yeah, he was the voice of Roger. And then I think also Baby Herman. I could be wrong on that, but I think he did both voices in Roger Rabbit.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it is their search for him throughout the 70s. Like we said earlier, this is a mild spoiler, but I don't think it's really that big of a spoiler if you...
It's based on history.
Yeah.
So...
Most famous unsolved serial killer probably in American history.
But this movie does purport to solve it.
Yes.
Basically. I mean, it essentially says that, yeah, we know who it probably is. There's just no way to confirm it because the guy's dead.
Yeah. Arthur Lee Allen.
Yes.
It leans hard into the theory that he was. It shows a lot of evidence, which is apparently based on fact.
I believe it. Yeah. I mean, it's based off books written about Zodiac.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean... It does have a lot of the facts, and it has a lot of the actual, like, true crime basis.
And supposedly, the recreations that they do, are they try to lean heavy where there are survivors or witnesses who can help reconstruct the scene. That's why you don't see, I don't recall anything where he kills everybody present. You know, I don't recall any murders. There's always a living witness or somebody who saw.
Yeah, the kids in the window or, you know.
Yeah.
One of the, you know, bows that get away.
Somebody saw something, yeah. And so supposedly those recreations are very accurate to what the witness testimony was at the time. And supposedly they went back and interviewed people, including the surviving witnesses. And it was strong enough that they actually reopened the case, and it's still open to this day. It had been closed when the movie came out.
Hmm.
I read where David Fincher said that he grew up in the Bay Area when this was going on. And so he can remember riding a school bus, like, and how they were so worried that the kids would be shot on the school bus, like the Zodiac threatened.
Absolutely.
The Zodiac kind of fits the same, like, Ted Bundy, Son of Sam, where nobody knows how many people he actually killed. Mm-hmm. He may have started much earlier.
Yeah.
I think there's 5 confirmed murders, but there could be as many as 20.
Which is a very low body count as serial killers go.
Yeah.
Bare minimum is 4. Mm-hmm. So you have to hit at least 4 to be considered a serial killer.
Yeah. And which I was thinking was 3, but yeah. Rude.
I think it's 4. I'd have to go back to my criminology
class
and remember.
But they believe it's probably closer to 20. He claims like 30 plus victims, but who knows? He claims some fake ones that he did not do.
Yeah. The real heavy hitters are upwards of like 60, 70 bodies.
I don't know how many Ted Bundy killed, but it was he also led police down some dark, some Bundy know, blind
had,
alleys.
Yeah, Bundy had a lot, but I think a lot of them were happening at the same time.
Yeah.
So like the sorority house and...
BTK was double digits. I think he was like 13.
BTK was quite a few.
Yeah.
He was another one that evaded police for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he also used kind of the same, like, cryptic...
Toying with the cops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's crazy, like, they caught him via, like, an old disk drive. They basically, like, hacked one of the disk drives he sent in and
figured out. Yeah, he didn't realize the technology could do what it could, essentially.
They were able to put him, like, with his church. There was, like, an old bit of, like, data from his church where he was, like, a deacon or something.
Yeah.
Which is brings me to one question I asked my wife. My wife's a huge true crime fan, podcasts, everything. She's a big, like, was it Murderino, like my favorite murder?
Yeah, yeah.
Murder Squad. She listens to all that stuff. And the thing that gets me is, like, if there is truly, like, they believe 20 suspected kills for this guy, how is there no DNA anywhere in any of these crime scenes that they could try and trace?
Yeah. Well, and I think before DNA was really a big part of crime, it wasn't well cared for in crime scenes, kind of like fingerprints.
Yeah.
Like prior to when fingerprints were a prevalent part of solving crimes, they just didn't preserve that piece of it. And also DNA evidence is not as reliable as shows like CSI make us think.
Yeah.
So I think Zodiac is one that it happened in so many different municipalities across such a long period of time that it's really hard to collect all the data. And that's one of the things that made it hard to track serial killers back in the 60s and 70s was... these different municipalities weren't working together.
Yeah.
So like we saw it in the movie of, you know, calling around all the different, you know, precincts that had a crime, like trying to figure out some sort of common thread when Mark Ruffalo is calling and he's just like, oh no, you got to call this guy. And he's like, oh no, no, you got to call this guy. It's just, they're so segmented. Mm-hmm. And it's the same way with chain of evidence.
Yeah.
Like evidence is not preserved the same way in those smaller California towns in the 60s.
They just don't deal with the same crimes.
They don't. I mean, they don't have the protocol. I mean,
yeah.
How many crime shows do we see where they're like, oh, this idiot's running all over my crime scene?
Yeah. Well, you look at these scenes and like multiple scenes in the movie, we see like people handling like, you know, like the Chronicle, they'll get a letter and then they all handle it. They pass it around to everybody in the room, you know, and it's like,
how many people touch this?
Yeah. It's like there's no way you could get a print off of that.
No.
It's just amazing that there was never like a drop of blood or, you know, anything, a hair.
Yeah.
At any of these scenes where it's like now you could do like the whatever 23andMe, Ancestry.com kind of a thing.
Which is how the Golden State Killer got caught.
It's like they could at least like they could rule out people like Arthur Lee Allen. Or there was another guy that they've come up with in the last couple of years named Gary Francis Post that they think might be him.
Yeah.
But they, as far as I know, like the people that were involved really think it was Arthur Lee Allen. And because of like the procedural snafus, like the evidence snafus and, you know, the bureaucratic like red tape that they had to go through, they never were able to pin it on him.
Well, and like we see in the other David Fincher, Mindhunter, the FBI did not have any sort of interest in serial killers at this time. There was no real process for serial killers. Otherwise, this would have been handled as a federal case.
Yeah.
And it definitely wasn't. It was just a, yep, we got a serial killer. All right. San Francisco's running the case on this one. Then Vallejo's running the case on this one.
And then nothing.
Yeah. And so there's no coordination.
And you see also a little bit of how, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal, whatever.
Jake?
Yes. His character.
Mysterio.
Jake Gyllenhaal is investigating he's a cartoonist. He's not even an investigative reporter.
He's just a guy that likes puzzles.
Yeah. And it gave me a little bit of a, was it Michelle McNamara vibe with the Golden State Killer? Like she helped crack that case.
Yeah.
And it's like sometimes like even if it's a civilian, it's like a fresh pair of eyes, you know, especially somebody who's sharp, who can take the clues apart.
Well, and like, you know, Ruffalo's character in this movie, you know, he says multiple times, like I have had 200 bodies since then. Like I don't have the bandwidth to keep on this case like you do.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like McNamara, she can devote her time just on Golden State Killer, whereas the police have to, you know, keep moving. Cases go cold and they let them go cold.
And, but it also, I mean, on a sadder note, it reminds me of like how that the Golden State Killer kind of broke Michelle McNamara. You know, it kind of broke her spirit.
Yeah.
It almost does that to the cartoonist character here. You know, it's like it almost ruins his life, you know?
Oh, I mean, it does. I mean, he ends up writing a book. Mm-hmm. And I think that's his only saving grace, but he definitely lets the case consume him. It affects his new wife. It affects his relationship with his kids.
Puts him in danger.
Yeah.
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 And, you know, it reminds me also of the JFK movie with Kevin Costner and Jim Garrison, where, like, that just destroys his family. He gets so involved in it. Mm-hmm. And the same deal where it's like it actually puts them in danger. The thing about All the President's Men is, like, Woodward and Bernstein, the two reporters, are both single men. They present as, like, they're both, they have a lot less to lose. Not to say that they have nothing to lose, but it's like it's a different scenario when you have a wife and kids at home to think about. Yep. You know, if you're a young single man, it's like, I think you're going to be more brazen about that. You know, if I were in Yelan Hall's shoes, I would be very cautious. I would almost say to hell with it. You know, I don't want to, you know, some guy's calling, breathing heavy on the phone. I don't want to mix up with that. It's more than what I could.
Some people pay good money for that.
Exactly. I mean, like $2.99 a minute if you dial the right number. Yeah, we're going to bill you guys for that.
This next minute is just going to be us breathing heavily into the mics.
Yeah. But when he went on the date with his eventual wife, it's like, man, that's a great icebreaker of, like, you know, what he's been doing. It's like, well, I'm trying to catch the Zodiac killer, you know. What a great first date icebreaker, you know.
It's definitely something. What would be the equivalent of that now?
I don't know. I mean, that would still be a great one of, like, you know, yeah, we're working on some cold case files, you know, trying to catch serial killers, you know.
We don't have as many serial killers these days. Mm-mm.
I mean, it's just, like you said, there's so much evidence that can be.
Yeah, well, and serial killers, for the most part, have been replaced with spree killers. Uh-huh. People who get that inclination now typically take it out all at once.
Yeah, in a rush.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they know that the crimes are generally caught. Well, not, that's absolutely not true. There's a ton of crimes that don't get caught. But yeah. Generally, people's assumption is that, spree killing is a more beneficial, I don't know.
Yeah, the technology is going to catch you.
Yeah.
Eventually, you're going to get caught. Which I know, like in Tulsa here, they have a high, it's 90 plus catch rate for their killings.
For murder?
Yeah.
We have
one of the highest conviction rates for murder.
Interesting.
Yeah. And some other places, probably, I think in 70-ish. Mm-hmm. It's lower for sure.
Yeah.
But
my hometown has a serial killer.
Right now.
No, a famous one. He was caught, but he definitely serial killed in my hometown.
Oh, really?
When I was a kid, yeah, he killed a 12-year-old girl when I think I was 6 years old.
Wow.
So, and then he carried on and he killed like three other people.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What was his name? Did he have like a catchy?
Oh, William Clark something.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, this I think has started the whole craze with serial, like, public fascination with it.
It definitely, this was a big one that sort of rejuvenated.
In the American consciousness.
In the American consciousness, yeah.
Yeah.
But like I said, prior to that, in the 1920s, during Prohibition, the gangster era was a big time for true crime.
Yeah. So this definitely had a great cast. Like you said, it had Robert Downey Jr., Mark Ruffalo, Jake Gyllenhaal. Goose. Jake Gyllenhaal.
Had Goose.
You had Anthony Edwards. So what did you think of it as a film? What were your thoughts?
I thought it was really good. I had seen it before a long time ago. I think prior to me knowing more about the Zodiac case as I do now, yeah. I've listened to a lot of true crime podcasts since then.
Yeah.
I thought it was definitely interesting. It really jumped. It makes a lot of time jumps. It covers a large span of time.
Very fast.
And the show or the movie very quickly jumps like month and a half. 2 months.
18 four months.
18 yeah. months. It's like, it's kind of hard to keep track of.
Yeah.
But it has a lot of ground to cover.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was an interesting portrayal of the case. Really goes into, it doesn't go into all the details. Like you said, the body count for Zodiac is not as, we don't know how high it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they showed what they could, or what they knew about and what they could, you know, have details about. But obviously there's a lot of stuff about Zodiac that we don't know.
Yeah.
And won't ever know.
Yeah. And some of that, I think it's just bad luck. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, everything just didn't fall in the right place to not only catch him, but like you say, also to have a handle on what he did.
Well, and there's stuff like routine police work, like, you know, the two cops that were on the motorcycles that passed the guy before they updated the APB.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they had just, you know, seen him and stopped and talked to him as he was walking away from the crime scene, they might have caught him.
Yeah. You see that all the time. I mean, I went through a big forensic files phase. And you'd see that all the time where, like, the suspect, like, the guy who ultimately did it would be stopped by police or questioned.
Oh, you got to do the true crime voice.
You know, I wish I could do the Forensic Files.
Forensic Files.
Yeah. That guy had a great voice.
Yeah.
Man. I mean, he made those episodes.
The Zodiac Killer would go on to kill 5 more times.
And then they found the key evidence, Saran Wrap.
No, I mean, there's tons of examples of just shoddy police work that doesn't, you know, you could have caught this person way, way before.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, there's, go back to most serial killer cases and you can generally point to some phase where they should have been caught sooner.
Yeah. This also used, I love the music. It has David Shire, who did the music for All the President's Men.
Really good music.
Yeah. Yeah. That same kind of spare, you know, very atmospheric score. Mm-hmm. I really like it. Great cinematography. I mean, really good use of, like, he does some flashier camera work with, like, the newspaper headlines, like, you know, filling up the screen. But it's never distracting. It's never showy.
This is a very dark movie, mm-hmm. not in terms of content, because yes, it is, but also in terms of lighting. It's yeah. very, like, you know, very mellow lighting. Things are very kind of sepia, not sepia toned, but very, you know, that 60s tan beige.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like that vibe.
Yeah.
Throughout the movie.
Feels like it could have been shot then.
Yeah. Kind of like that green lighting, and it's just very drab.
Yeah. Seven was that way too. Mm-hmm. Seven was a very grim movie to look at.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a lot of times the shadows were so heavy in Seven that you could barely make out like Brad Pitt or Morgan Freeman because it was like so dark.
I think that's Fincher's style. Mm-hmm. I think generally that's kind of his style that he goes for.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's unusual for him. I mean, if you go to something like the Social Network's a brighter movie, but mm-hmm. it also fits the content.
Social Network feels very sterile.
Yes.
Like bright white sterile, which I feel like that fits the
Zuckerberg. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely indicative of
a robot.
Yeah. It's very, very clean, almost like emotionless. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very clinical.
So what did you rank this movie?
I would probably say this is a solid, 4 out of 5, 8 out of 10. Definitely a very, like, atmospheric. I mean, if you love true crime, this should be a staple. This should be an essential movie to watch.
Yeah.
It's a very dense, plot heavy, but never boring. I mean, it definitely presents the suspects and evidence in a way that keeps you involved all the way through.
Yeah. You're kind of trying to solve the puzzle along the way.
Yeah. And, you know, you definitely feel the frustration of the characters as they close in on a suspect, but they can't quite make it stick.
Yeah.
You know, you feel the limitations of the time. Mm-hmm. And it's like now, like you've said, they probably would be able to get that stuff with the technology. They can make it work. And they probably would have convicted this guy, Arthur Lee Allen.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because they're just one step away. They have piles of circumstantial evidence, including the guy's wearing a Zodiac watch.
Yeah.
You know, he has all sorts of stuff. I mean, a lot of stuff, like he was a teacher and a convicted sex offender more than once. You know, he has talked to people about killing people, about being the Zodiac. A lot of stuff adds up, but it's like they can't quite tie anything firm to him, you know. No. So they're so close, but yeah. And of course, then when he dies, the call stopped, the taunting stops. I mean,
and when he's in prison for that stretch of time, it's like, okay, all the crime, all the murder stopped, all the email, or not emails, but all the mail and all the, you know, taunts.
The ciphers.
Yeah.
It just makes too much sense.
Yeah, it just lines up too perfectly. They just never had the thing to tie him back. And I think, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? So this was a snub, right?
Yes, this was nominated for nothing. And I feel like it was great. The acting was all phenomenal. Robert Downey Jr. was great. And it's like, he's playing a kind of destructive, an addict. Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone who's consumed, you know, with vices, and it's like, man, that's got to hit close to home for Robert Downey Jr. There was a time where, you know, it's like I told my wife, Jo, I was like, there was a time where this wouldn't be acting for him, about circa 2000, you know, somebody who was like drunk at 10 a.m., chain smoking and, you know, doing every drug known to man. It's like, that was Robert Downey Jr.
So. Well, that probably informed his performance too.
Yes, and it's a very effective performance.
Yeah. Who did get nominated this year? Because it was 07, is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Any idea who won or...
That was around the No Country for Old Men time period.
Was it?
Yeah, I believe so. Mm. And There Will Be Blood also was around this time period. So I'm thinking those movies probably cleaned up
yeah.
that year.
That makes sense.
But yeah, this, I mean, you definitely, I think this could have been a Best Picture nominee easily. Definitely a Best Screenplay, Best Directing. I mean, it's, there were several awards at this thing. Best Score.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing. Yeah, like you've said, the only flaw is it does move very quickly. I would almost want to see, like, a miniseries.
Or, like, an extended edition.
You know, or, like, the HBO, like, 4 or 5 episodes of that, where they could really stretch, get into the case.
Well, and I think that's kind of how Mindhunter kind of came out, is David Fincher was able to, you know, do justice to the story he was trying to tell and draw it out, give the full, you know, full credit to the process, actually dive into these cases.
Yeah, give you the details that, you know, you really want. Because if you're into these kind of movies and true crime, you want to get into those details.
Yeah.
The little things that, you know, could potentially break the case open. But, yeah, I think this is a great movie, definitely one worth going back to, for sure.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
And, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's like, of the wines we've done, I think Riesling is great. Riesling might not, you might need something heavier. We're doing a Red Zin for our next podcast. That's another one that gets a bad rap in the wine world because, again, the California Zins have always been so big and jammy. And, you know, like they're like jelly, literally.
Is that your sweet red?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, so we're going to pick one that's not heavy on the jam. It's going to be a little more balanced, a little less like, not a fruit bomb like some of the California Zins could be. So, but I do think, I mean, a California Red Zin would be a great pair with Zodiac because it's also going to come from the same area. So, and there's one called Segacio, pretty common. If you're looking for a good pair with Zodiac, not that the Ravines is, if you like white wine, Ravines is great. But look for Segacio, Red Zin.
Segacio.
Yes. And they actually have a blue, a red, and I think a green label. The blue is going to be your most economical of the three. It's in the 20s, price range-wise. Always gets high reviews in, like, all the wine magazines. So
it's kind of like a Johnny Walker.
Yeah. Keep an eye out for Segacio. It's great. So
I just I hate Johnny Walker. Tastes like an antique shop to me.
Johnny Walker is one of those ones where it's like, you know, it has that name. It's a blended whiskey. People think of it, it must be the high, like a single malt, but it's not. It's a blended whiskey.
I don't mind a blended whiskey.
No.
I just don't like Johnny Walker.
But if you're going to do like a Johnny Walker Blue and charge people hundreds and hundreds, potentially thousands of dollars.
Yeah, hard pass.
For a blended whiskey, you know, it's like, no, you need...
I need a 30-year single malt
scotch. Go get a single malt, yeah.
If I'm paying $300 for a bottle, I'm getting a 30-year single malt scotch.
Don't pay for the Johnny Walker name.
No.
Yeah, there's some great scotches, some of which you may not have heard of. That could be, you know, not only a better buy, but better flavor. So, you know, especially if you're doing it for a special occasion.
We should do a bourbon podcast.
We absolutely should. We could do bourbon. We could do a whiskey podcast. We could do a whiskey month of, like, scotch, bourbon, the whole bit.
That will be a dangerous series.
Do an Irish whiskey? Yes. I mean, yeah, we could do some great stuff. And there's some great American whiskeys that come from other parts of the country. Like High West out of Utah, they have really good ryes.
Colorado has some really good whiskeys.
And there's the Hudson from upstate New York. They have some good, they have a really good rye whiskey as well. So definitely worth checking out. But this has been another Cinema Vino, and we thank you all very much for listening to our Zodiac podcast. Check that out. And next up, we're going to do The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, classic Western.
Classic spaghetti Western.
Classic spaghetti, the definitive spaghetti Western.
Which got zero awards.
Zero awards. One of the most influential Westerns, one of the most influential movies ever made.
I saw that this was actually the highest rated movie on IMDb to not have a single Oscar nomination.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, people like Tarantino and Scorsese, I mean, they'll tell you all about Sergio Leone and how much they were inspired by him.
Yeah.
So, crazy. Crazy influential movie, and then that'll be a good one. So definitely one to check out. We're gonna do some Red Zin with that one. So yeah. So Sean Jordan,
yeah,
thank you again.
Glad to be here,
and we will see you guys next time. Be sure to listen, rate, and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Our website is at cinemavino.net, and reviews of these movies can be found at toddwoffordmovies.com. If you're interested in starting your very own podcast, Blueberry is one of the top hosting companies in the world. You can get your first month free with Blueberry by using the promo code CinemaVino. You can also use the hosting estimator on their site to determine the best plan for you, And don't forget, that's Cinema Vino to get your first month free.